in the YA stacks. I'm Michelle.
I'm Paige. As Michelle says, just press record and we'll say stuff and then we'll stop and then we'll be done.
that's our strategy for tonight. So this book that we read might very well be the worst book we've read thus far.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
I think so.
Do you remember the books we read? Okay, remember when we read Red Girl, Blue Boy, and I was like, you hate this more than you hate We Were Liars? And you didn't even hate Red Girl, Blue Boy more than you hated We Were Liars.
Okay, there's a difference there. We Were Liars had some merits. Did I hate it more? Yeah. This book is just blatantly bad.
Red Girl, Blue Boy is way worse than that book.
I don't know if I would say that.
Because at least I know in this book that the writer...
That's true, he's
trying. Tried right. But I feel like I didn't like it, and it didn't work for me at all.
I feel like he did higher but risk I felt like he could have changed like,
it way if he lower. Wanted to. Whereas I felt like the woman who wrote Red Girl, Blue Boy, I felt like that was... If someone had critiqued it, I don't know if she could have changed it. I don't know if that was in her wheelhouse, really, to rewrite that. I think we were stuck with what we got. I don't know. This one, at least, is, like, knowing. You know? Like, the author knows what they're doing. Red Girl, Blue Boy, I felt like, was not.
Well, I feel like he doesn't know. Like, I think he knows what he's trying to do. I mean, should we tell you what we read?
Maybe the tone was off.
So we read It's All Your Fault by Paul Rudnick. So. And it is speaking of our dear friend Emily Lockhart when we were live.
It's super.
She is the one on the cover who tells me that Paul Rudnick makes me screech with laughter and sob with fury that I can't write the way he does.
which, like, and We Were
Liars. Maybe at that point we should have been like, put this back.
We should be a step back, yeah. And We Were, it's very highly praised. There's E. Lockhart is on the front, but then Andy Cohen of, like, Bravo, like the TV show network, and Meg Cabot both have, like, glowing praise on that cover.
Is Meg Cabot technically, like, her Princess Diaries? That's sort of a comedy. Right?
What?
I don't know. So this book is, like, kind of, like, painted as a book within, like, almost a comedy genre, which is not a genre in literature.
I think she's trying to say that the book is meant to be funny.
What?
I don't know.
Not what I meant to say. That's why I didn't say that.
Whatever. I'm just going to have another bourbon.
Yeah, Paige is drunk.
Sorry.
And no. She's getting belligerent.
No, but I am so tired. So I just started a new job, and I'm training new counselors. But I haven't started because the new counselors haven't come in. These are going to be like counselors in training. They haven't come in yet. But we've had 2 days of staff orientation. And a lot of it's been outside. So we've also just been like, I'm getting a sunburn because I forgot sunscreen again. And like, been outside. I've just like slept like heavy, heavy boxes around like all of this like private school campus for like hours. And it's a total shit show there because all camps are disorganized, even the organized ones. But like, these people are really starting to. Yeah, anyway, I'm also very introverted, and so if you're introverted, Michelle says it happens to her too. What happens to me is that the point where I get so tired, and it also has to do with being around people.
Yeah.
If you're around people for, like, such a long, long time, and you don't get any time to yourself, eventually I become so tired that I start crying. Not, like, emotionally crying, just, like, the physical reaction of, like, tears coming out of your, like, eyes.
Your body's just, like, so upset about what has happened to it that it's just getting you, like, it's just trying to get you to stop. It'll try anything.
Yeah. So, am I...
So, Paige is tired, red sunburn, which means she's extra dehydrated, and we know that Paige is never hydrated. So, the alcohol might be getting to her faster, and she's literally just drinking, like, straight bourbon.
Well, yeah, how else would you drink bourbon?
I am so
bad. Anyway, the point is I was crying before this, so I'm drinking now to take the edge off. If I wasn't drinking, I wouldn't be focused on it. That sounds bad.
But anyway, so she gets a little more belligerent than usual.
I'm not having a lot. What are we talking about here?
This book.
Oh, E. Lockhart. Okay, so her thing, she's like, what did she say? Screech with laughter and sob with fury. On We Were Liars podcast, I raised the idea that maybe Emily Lockhart is just super crafty, and she's just really trying to write, like, a horrible teenager. But considering that screech with laughter and sob with fury, which sounds suspiciously close to the cadence of We Were Liars, I'm starting to think that just is her writing, period.
I'm, like, beginning to become worried that Emma Lockhart is gonna, like, catch wind of this. And then, like,
we might need to engage private security, so if anyone can get us a good deal.
We should have thoughts. And I also like to talk to her because I just feel like...
I'm not sure we can have a conversation at this point. I think we've said a lot of things that we can't walk back.
It's a little
slash aren't interested in walking back.
Emma Walker hasn't liked anything we've posted, but there have been some authors that, like, we haven't given rave reviews to that, like...
We haven't trashed anyone on social media.
No, but really? Likes everything, yeah. Obviously.
Huh?
We link to things?
Well, yeah.
So, if some people take the second step after liking and commenting on multiple of our photos... Then decide to listen to the one about their book.
Shout out to Danielle. Is her last name Clayton?
I think
it's Danielle Clayton. Co-author of Tiny Pretty Things, who liked our photos on Instagram, which is nice of her. Our podcast isn't super glowing. We like her. We've never met her. I'm sure we would like her, though.
And we love her publishing company.
Yeah.
Great idea. We're working on creating a more diverse book list for our next solo book.
It's wax from my Maker's Mark bottle. There's this, like, red speck in my glass, and I thought it was fuzz from this blanket. It's the wax from the Maker's Mark bottle.
Okay. Anyway, so if you have any book suggestions on books, diverse books.
We did come up with, like, 20, though.
We did.
We have a longer list than we usually have for just, like, anything.
It's about average. I feel like we normally do 8 to 10.
I felt like it was a lot longer. I don't know. We'll count. Whatever.
We'll talk about that. You don't need to be involved in that process. Yeah. Okay. Unless you want to be. Then send us an email. We have an email. We've gotten one email. I was like, wait, not from one of you.
Oh, we need to respond to that. Whoops. Anyway.
You want that?
All right. Can we get on topic?
We don't have very much to say, so we have to fill those with some other stuff. Anyway, so do you want to start with the plot?
Let's start with the plot, yeah, and we can talk about why we read it after we talk about the plot.
Yeah.
We're going to do, this is for real this time, we're going to do the plot super fast, because we don't have anything to say.
Well, every time you say that, we curse
us. I guess.
So this book starts with this girl named Kate.
Yeah, so it's around these two cousins.
Kate and Heller.
Katie and Heller.
Her name's Caitlin, but she goes by Katie. I can't remember. I read this book quite a while ago at this point, but...
I read the last 30 pages and I loved them.
But yeah, so it's about these two cousins. Katie is part of this family that is, like, pretty much the Duggars, but, like, with only the nice parts. The introduction sort of reminded me of Footloose in the sense that we're, like, set up a very, like, oppressive Christian family of... I guess in Footloose they don't say anything, but they're, like... anti a lot of things. It's very, like, anti things. Like, we're not...
I can't help myself because I've never seen this.
Well, Footloose is there in the town and they, like, ban dancing because it's, like, demonic. So, and then, like, as they, like, the teens in town dance anyway and then dancing, like, frees them and I, like, was like, this is what's gonna happen. I mean, it's not a very original plot. I don't think that's the point. We opened with them in jail, actually.
Yeah, it's told as a series of flashbacks, which I don't really care for, but whatever. Yeah, so it's these two cousins, and they're, like, polar opposites. So Katie, like, Michelle said, is from this, like, Duggar family, only without anything bad or really actually controversial.
Right, they just, like, sing and, like, don't eat cake.
I don't think that's part of it.
They do, it talks about really? It later, yeah.
Oh, they don't
believe really in, like, sugar. Maybe they're Mormon.
Anyway, whatever. And then Heller, which is not a real name.
Heller, well, her mom, Aunt Ecstasy, as she likes to be called, her mom named her Heller in an attempt to just be, like, controversial to the rest of the family, because the world revolves around this family, and Heller's aunt just does things to make them mad, apparently. So she named her Heller because it has Hell in it.
Yeah.
Her name's Heller.
Whatever. Anyway, Heller is Miley Cyrus.
Like, yeah.
Thinly veiled.
Like, not even very thinly.
She, like, started a children's television
like
show.
Like, wet tissue paper on top of her. She's veiled.
A children's television show called Anna Banana, which sounds almost exactly like Hannah Montana.
It's about this girl who lives a double life.
Yeah, are you shocked? Anyway, there's a bunch of scandals and drug use and blah, blah, blah.
So she got married secretly once, and I...
So Katie and Heller used to be best friends or whatever when they were children, and then bad shit went down, and this is something that's held back as a secret throughout the novel, which is really annoying to me, and I've still annoying to me. And all the books we've read, every time it's happened, it's still annoying. So there's some big falling out, something went down that we don't know about as readers in the beginning. And so then they haven't talked for like 4 years or whatever. And then how the story gets set up is that Katie is begged by Heller's mother and her team to come in.
People.
To come in and take care of her, basically.
For like a couple weeks.
Because
she has a big movie premiere coming out, and they don't want her to like mar the reputation of the movie.
You can't sink the movie before it comes out. So Katie is enlisted to be Heller. I don't know.
Like,
to
your profession.
This probably made no sense to me, really. And eventually, later, finally, it's explained that it was that Heller wanted Katie there, like, specifically or whatever. But in the beginning, you just, like, they're professional to do this. There's literally, like, jobs as a kid, you know, a child wrangler. And that is their job, is to wrangle children in the same way you would wrangle animals. There's also such people as, like, personal assistants and managers.
She has three personal assistants.
And a manager. And, like, she's a little old for that, but, she's like, seven. There are still managers.
I think both of them are 17.
Yeah, they're, like,
they're not little adults.
There's just, like, all sorts of professional people that do this as a job. So why you would think that the really super inexperienced girl who's been homeschooled and, like, no experience in the world and, like, no real way to work to, like, deal with any of this, why you think she would be a really good person in that situation? I don't know. Whatever. Shit goes down. I'm just kidding. Stuff happens in the novel, basically. Gonna skip all that to the end. Because that's where stuff just happens.
So Katie is recruited, but she brings, and she's hoping to, like, convert Heller to, like, her family's way of living. Not, like, the Christianity aspect, that's not really as important to her. It's more way of life.
I think it's just not written well.
Yeah.
To show that. Probably because the author's not a fundamentalist Christian. I don't know.
He is not, for sure.
Could be a reason.
Definitely confirmed. yeah. But so she wears knee socks everywhere, which is, like, a major plot point for, like, half of the book. Anyway.
It's commented on about 3 times every 7 pages.
Yeah. So a 3-7 ratio there. And additionally, so a little more about Katie. So she is going to really good at singing. And her family, so she's applying to colleges right now. And she doesn't know what she's going to do, and so this is kind of a big underlying conflict that's going on throughout this whole book. Because she is super anxious to, like, leave her lifestyle that she's grown accustomed to with her family. But her family's kind of pushing her to do it. Anyway, she also has pretty severe anxiety and OCD.
Mm-hmm.
She's really scared of escalators, which I'm also scared of escalators, because one time when I was, like, 5, my grandmother told me that they could eat me. And it, like, for some reason launched itself into my subconscious and, like, still to this day, like, quite wary of escalators. But she, like, can't even, like, look at them without having panic attacks. And she just, like, tap things and do OCD things because
she has OCD.
Because she has OCD.
Anyway, so, yeah, and so then, blah, 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 there's, like, Heller and Katie just, like, fight most of the book as Katie tries to make Heller stop doing anything that could be construed as morally wrong. We're from the Christian framework. But then the end, so Heller has some engagement with this cancer patient through the Make-A-Wish Foundation, and this cancer patient ends up talking them into, like, helping her do these, like, 3 crazy things, and everyone goes along with it because she has cancer. It's the reason given in the book. And so it involves breaking into a cupcake factory, and it involves getting a tattoo, and then somewhere along the way, Katie starts having a panic attack, and so Heller's like, here, take this unidentified pill so you don't have an anxiety attack. We find out it's a baby aspirin.
So why it does she not have baby aspirin in her? For her blood pressure issues?
I don't know.
Like, that's the only reason anyone besides, like, a mother of babies would have baby aspirin. Because you can take a baby aspirin every day to, like, prevent yourself from clotting.
I think it's a real aspirin. I think that's usually what you do.
Yeah.
Maybe you cut a real aspirin in half or something.
I don't know.
I don't take aspirin.
We are only in our 20s, so we're not.
We're not that old.
don't worry.
Yeah, not yet. Consumers of Bayer. Anyway, so they're helping. Katie gets roped into this. Heller gives her this, what we know later in the baby aspirin, but the time it's just an unidentified pill. And somehow it not only snaps Katie out of her anxiety attack, it like is the equivalent of a rave drug.
She like blacks out and like winds up like stopping a shooting at a gas station.
Yeah, she
and,
gets
like,
a tattoo.
Steals a car, gets a tattoo.
Steals a car.
Like goes crazy.
Stops an armed robbery at a gas station, right. Hacks off her hair and dyes it like purple and pink. Mm-hmm. And then like comes to, like she doesn't, she like somehow, she suddenly is like, oh my gosh, why am I driving?
The baby aspirin wore off.
The baby aspirin wore off. And she's like, oh my gosh, why am I driving a convertible? Why is my hair cut off? Why do I have a tattoo bandage on my arm? And why is there a gun? Like, it's a scary situation to suddenly become conscious to, I think. And they're like, oh, you don't remember any of that? You don't remember when you like thwarted armed robbers? She doesn't remember that.
I thought when this initially happened, I thought they were just lying to her. Like, she didn't do any of these things. I don't know how it would have happened. Like, I don't know.
And this is how we get the jail framing story, right? Because eventually when you steal cars and, like, brandish firearms, like, the law catches up with you, generally speaking.
They don't get in trouble.
Especially when you're teenage girls.
Oh, no, they get in trouble when they jump off. No, because right. She comes to. And we find out what happened with her and Heller. So, what happened, their big trauma was they went to this, like, there's an abandoned quarry in their
quarry.
Sorry. abandoned quarry in their town. And,
filled with water.
Right. It so flooded. They, like, hit an underground river and it flooded the quarry.
Quarry.
Quarry, that's what I said.
Quarry.
I can't Quarry. Pronounce things.
Query.
Query. Stop. mispronounce things all the time, and I never put it out except the one time I did point out, which maybe the one time you mispronounce something.
What?
Huh? It was in the last podcast you were drinking in.
Oh, dehydrated? 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 I will say that I have pronounced anachronistic incorrectly 10 times on the podcast.
Yeah, I don't know what that. Well, I keep saying, I know what that word means, but like
anachronistic, and I mean to say anachronistic. I keep putting the stress on the wrong.
I can't hear stresses in words.
That's kind of mean.
I like okay. I have a really hard time hearing stresses. We did sophomore year.
Sophomore year,
vocab books.
Yeah, I guess.
You like the red vocab books with the like pencil on the cover.
I guess that's true. I don't know
that. But we had to put accents on where the accent would be on the word, which. I don't know.
That only works in Spanish. Spanish is set up to have that word.
What? Well, we should just, like, circle the stressed syllables so you knew how to pronounce it, and I just, like, couldn't do it.
I obviously never did that with anachronistic, because I've come
up with it as anachronistic. Our vocab words were never that, like, advanced.
Anachronistic.
I don't remember anywhere, but
I hope I'm pronouncing it right, but I haven't got backwards. I'm pretty sure it's anachronistic. Yeah, if you listen, you'll hear me say it.
Anyway, back to the quarry.
Oh, the real book.
So what happened, the traumatic event happened, it's flooded with water, and so people jump off of, like, abandoned mine equipment into the pool all the time. And so Heller and Katie went out to do this at one point. Katie didn't want to, obviously.
Katie didn't want to do anything.
And then Heller did it, and she was fine, and Katie did it, and, like, hit her head or something.
Bad stuff went down. Katie almost dies as the upshot, and it's because Heller talked her into it, and people were being unsafe, and that's what happens when you do unsafe things.
Heller was hallucinating this, and Katie was just a ghost. Just kidding.
What? Oh. E. Lockhart. That's not what happened. So there's this trauma, and Katie, and that's what they said.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Oh my god. Two worlds combined.
Imagine the worst book we've ever read.
Combined with the second
one. So, like, the syntax of Red Girl, Blue Boy characterization. The, like, not funniness of this one, and the, like, horrible whacked-out events of We Were Liars in one package.
I remember my bed.
I would drink myself to death.
Wow.
I said earlier that I wasn't alcoholic, but...
And she proves time and time again. Anyway, okay, so the last thing after Katie comes to on their, like, crazy outing, the last thing they're gonna do is the cancer girl wants to do something, like, really crazy.
Yeah. And Heller's like, why don't we go back to the quarry that you almost died in 4 years ago?
And the cancer girl's like, I want to die on my own terms. And so it's like, it gets dark, and you're like, what? Also, like, most people don't, like, injure themselves in the gym before. Katie's just, like, dumb and, like, hecked up. But, yeah, so they go back to the quarry, and they're like, you don't have to do it. But Katie's like, no, I'm gonna do it. And then they all jump in, and everyone's fine. But then the mine collapses.
No.
The crane collapses. Yeah, something breaks.
They're jumping off this, like, hanging chain over the thing, which I think is attached to some... Right, some piece of equipment hanging. So they would just use it as, like, a rope. Only it's a chain, and when Katie does it, the arm snaps off and almost hits her in the head.
But it is interesting. And that's when they get arrested.
Yep, eventually they get arrested, they're in jail. They get off because
they explain the story to the judge, and yeah, then the Heller is
gives
the Heller
free tickets to
the movie that she's premiering. And that Katie came out to, like, prevent her.
Yeah, so she gets free premiere tickets to the judge for his
and her three grandchildren.
Granddaughters.
Hermione, Bella, and Katniss.
Yeah.
The social satire here is so subtle.
I don't know if you caught those veiled references.
That was Hunger Games.
That's the kind of stuff you get push notes for.
Anyway.
Yep. And so,
and everyone was happy after.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
They're like hugging makeup and they're like,
I mean, Heller's been mad for, like, 4 years that Heller, like she almost died because of what Heller, like, pretty much, like, pushed her into doing, and then Heller dropped off the face of the planet. She's like, you didn't even say sorry that I almost, like, died, which seems like a really logical thing to be upset about. I also, and Heller's, like, mad that Katie's, like, bringing it up, and I'm like, oh, I think Katie might be in the right on this. Like,
I'm sorry, you're going to jump. I would not feel obligated to say sorry.
Okay, don't be pressured into things. It's the anti-peer pressure lesson, which is true. But also, like, if you're the kind, if you pressure someone into doing that, and then they almost die, like, that's on you, too, because you should not be so dumb as to, like, do whatever.
I'm sure so possible.
I'm working at the camp hunting event.
I'm talking to someone who hates when people use, like, people's excuses.
You need to be a role model. Especially if you're in a position of power and authority. Anyway, that's the book. Whatever. Yeah. I was mostly really bored. I was really annoyed by the book. I didn't like it.
It was really bad. So it's supposed to be a social satire. Like, there's no way around that. Like, that's what it's trying to be. There's a lot of, like, very direct references to things like Anna Banana, the Hannah Montana reference, or there's something called Bloodstead, which might be a reference to, like, any of the, like, romance vampire things. Yeah. Like, Vampire Diaries or True Blood or even Twilight as a TV show. Like,
yeah, could be.
There's a lot of these direct references, and they're not subtle at all.
That was, for me, the part that didn't work was that...
Yeah, me too.
Like, I'm fine with the idea, with the concept, but for me, I just don't find humor that's not... that has, like, is completely lacking in subtlety to be funny to me. Like, SNL is never really, I never really find it funny because it's so over the top. And when it's things that are more subtle, it's a lot more funny. I don't know. When people are just, like, beating you over the head with it.
Right.
It's not funny.
It's, yeah. And I also feel like when you're doing a social satire, as he's trying to do, like, you can't try to satire the entire social atmosphere of the time. Like, you kind of have to pick aspects. You have to pick and choose. You can't try to do everything.
And I mean, a lot of these things are already over. Hannah Montana is over. Like, man, it's not so right. Wrong. And, right. Like, Twilight has passed.
Right.
You know, a lot of these things are... That's the thing, is that, like, pop culture moves really fast, right. Too. So you're very quickly out of the moment.
Right, and then when you decide to pick such specific references, like Hannah Montana...
Uh-huh.
You would fall quickly victim to being old news before you're able to even publish your book. Whereas, like, if you were to talk about, like, fandom culture, which is something that's still happening and, like, constantly is changing, obviously, but if you were able to play on that more a larger cultural theme rather than these specific cultural moments, I think it might have read better.
Yeah.
And he does that sometimes. Like, the movie that she's working on is called Angel Wars, which is, like, I don't know. There's a ton of books out there that are, like, very similar.
Part Twilight, part Left Behind, part Hunger Games.
Part, like, Shadowhunters.
Part, like, Minecraft, I swear, because there's something in there called a creeper. And I know that's from Minecraft, because I nannied a 7-year-old boy who tried to get me to play Minecraft. Not on the computer.
No, just in
life. Just in life. Just in real life. Like, with, like, no props, no anything. He's like, do you want to play in, like, survival or creative? And I'm like, I don't even know what you're talking about. And he's like, all right, we'll play creative. And he's like, yeah. So I learned the words from Minecraft from him.
Right.
Don't know anything about it.
And I, so I get a little bit of that with, like, the overall Archie Angel Wars thing. And I think he's trying to kind of play on the, I've lost my word that I'm looking for, but this, like, huge gap between, like, Keller and Katie. And I think culturally we can see that. There are people that are, like, you know, especially in the teen world, there are kids that are, like, super sheltered, and then there are kids that are, like, super crazy. Which is an interesting thing, kind of the, and I think we see that throughout, not even just with teens, just, like, throughout the cultural world right now, is we have this kind of, like, huge chasm between some people and other people.
You're doing okay, so you ended it with some people and other people.
Okay. Well, I'm, like, trying to avoid saying, like, conservative and liberal, because I'm not meaning that in the political sense, and those words are too politically charged. I'm meaning that in the cultural sense. So instead, we went with some people and other people. Clearly, a superior choice.
Uh-huh.
So I think they, like, it could have been done. Like, it's not like a social satire is impossible. Like, that's why.
Yeah,
that's
I love the Colbert Report.
I love it too. It's sad that it's
the Colbert Report. That was, I think, the biggest thing that didn't work for me was that it just, like, was very overt.
Right. I think for sure that was the biggest
thing. Use of satire and parody. So, for me, like, we mentioned it a little bit, the whole idea of, like, Katie is being in this, like, fundamentalist Christian, like, there's very, it's very clearly set up as, like, a Duggar family-esque sort of thing, since there's not a lot of kids in the family, and they all, their names all start with the same letter, so the Duggar family is J, including some girl named Ginger, but spelled with a J. And I think it's okay, because in one of the Wizard of Oz sequel books, there's a Ginger. Spelled with a J, who's kind of a villain, but it's okay.
We're not a J name when you can get, so.
Well, yeah.
Who plans that far in advance? Naming your kids all matching names is very trendy right now. The Duggars, the Kardashians, both family icons of America.
Wow, on either side of this vast divide, when you come together over naming their children in one letter.
The great unifier. I hope that's a platform who our presidential candidates run on. I'm gonna elect a cabinet that all shares the same letter.
Yeah. Well, so this family, all their kids are named after C, including a girl named Calico. So, like, there's.
Which is a horrible name. Like, unless you're a cat,
it's a great name for a cat.
Yeah, it's a cat name. So, I feel like you couldn't even get away with naming a dog that.
No, why would you name a dog?
Why would you name a child? What is better, a cat named, or a dog named Calico, or a child?
A child.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. Anyway. If you're at the right, if you're, like, cool enough, you could lean in to Calico as your name.
Cheryl Sandberg. That name.
I could lean into my name as Calico.
I feel like you'd be a great
guy. I finally, like, adjusted. Thank you.
I feel like Calico might fit you better than Paige.
Yeah. I would say, I was like, I finally adjusted. I finally, like, you know, accepted the fact that my name is Paige. But it's taken several years.
She had to go through all five stages.
Yeah. Hazel is, I have a lot of, like, names I really like, and, like, Charlotte.
Hazel would be, like, an unfortunate one now, though.
Well, now it's very,
because,
like,
of
freaking Faultmark. Yeah, Tifios, if I say. Tifios.
I've heard John Green say it, so it's Tifios.
Who cares? Tifios. You know what?
We should call him. I don't have his number.
In some schools of aesthetics, author intent counts for zero. So just
I do believe author intent counts for very little, so.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't said it into this right now.
I've talked about it on the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Maybe I haven't. Maybe I. Remember that essay I wrote? For myself. I think you were done about it there.
What were we talking about? Oh, I really wanted my name to be Hazel, even though, like, Charlotte is one of my favorite names ever.
I think Charlotte's a good name.
Charlotte is a beautiful name. But if I had to choose my own name, Hazel is, like, my favorite name for me. Mm-hmm. But Calico, would I really like the name Calico.
I think we're going to rename Paige Calico.
That's fine.
I like my name. When I was, like, little and playing pretend, I always went by Elizabeth. I really like princess names. I think Elizabeth is a princess name.
Well, yeah.
Anyway, I really like classic names. But I don't think I rename myself. Except my name is sometimes really annoying because it starts with the wrong letter. If you didn't know that, my name is Nichelle with an N, not with an M.
Yeah, I thought about saying that on, like, one of my first podcasts, but I don't know, I get distracted.
So if you have been calling me Michelle in your head this whole time, you'd be wrong. You're a wrong person. Like,
I feel like it sounds different because on our first podcast we introduce you as Michelle and then we start talking about a Michelle character and it sounds different. It sounds different to me because
I already know. I don't know, but like people hear what they want to hear.
Oh yeah, no, my mom definitely thought Michelle was Michelle.
Like 30% of the people in my life probably think my name is Michelle. Like they're all acquaintances. It's not like my sister thinks my name is Michelle, but like I don't correct people. It's close enough. I know what they mean. And only gets confusing if there's a Michelle. Because then, but she's a little bit confusing anyway, because unless you really enunciate, like, if you're just yelling that, I'm just going to hear, like, close to my name and probably the attention.
Right.
Anyway,
what were we talking about? Maybe people Calico. Oh, there's all these parallels to the Duggar family, but they never really work. Because it's clear, like, the parents seem pretty chill for what you think of as fundamentalist Christian. They don't have any really defining attributes as fundamentalist Christians, other than these, like, couple things we mentioned that they're saying in Christian because they keep saying they do have this like family singing tradition, which is like that totally is a fundamentalist Christian thing. Like I definitely heard of because I spent a lot of time on the internet. And
one of Paige and I's favorite things to internet.
I thought you were just gonna leave it at that.
To internet.
One of our favorite things to internet is like stories about it's just like fundamentalist Christian stuff. And so yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, and so this is totally a thing. There are families that like, you know, they wear, like, the matching clothes, and, like, you know, the daughter's all, because you have to cover, like, almost all of yourself, so you have, like, the matching, like, pattern vest, and, like
curly elbows skirts. To ankles.
Yeah.
Elbows to ankles if you're lucky.
The whole wrist family ankles will go, if you're not. The whole family will go sing in prison or whatever.
Yeah.
No. This is a thing. But then it's never really expanded on.
No.
There's never anything, and, like,
they like,
a lot of fundamentalist Christians are like, there's a dark side there, and it's never brought up. And this one, they're really happy that their daughter's going to college.
Right, they want her to go, like, she wants to go to school where she can still live at home, and they want her to go to school that she's, like, going to be a couple hours away, but, like,
or something.
Yeah, but they want her to be gone, and, like, they also, they, like, don't approve of Heller's lifestyle, but, like, they aren't.
But they're fine sending their daughter to, like, go.
Right, they're not, like, don't ever talk to her.
Yeah.
She's damned to hell, don't speak to her.
It just didn't really work because it was clearly, like, that's not...
Right. It tried to be oppressive without being too... offensive? Slash dark.
It just didn't want to deal with any of the, like, the realities of it.
Right.
It was a very, very nice, cleaned-up, sanitized version of it. To be clear, we're not, like, going against Christianity.
We hate Christians.
We're not trying... I said, like,
yeah,
three podcasts ago,
Paige
my own
did
persuasion.
Paige did admit. Yeah, for sure. No, so, but I mean,
but
the Duggars
in terms of, like, fundamentalism, like, that's, like, we're touching a fringe
here. Right.
And
she didn't know what fundamentalism is.
Sorry.
It's a fringe.
But, yeah, and fringes of anything. Those are, you should know where the crazy people are.
That's where you get the most change. Anyway,
that's what we
have. Liminal spaces. I took a whole class on it in college. Didn't finish it. I dropped that class. Don't worry, guys.
Anyway, Michelle, did you want to talk about why we chose this
book? Yeah. So initially, our book, we've talked
and about... And I hated it 30 pages in. 30 pages in, I was already texting Michelle, like, I hate this book.
But she did agree to this. This was not one of the...
Well, yeah, like, I agreed to it, because...
Compromise books.
Again, Michelle's going to give you a reason.
So, when we look up books, you've heard us talk about our methods. So, we look up, like, a ton of lists, and we just start pulling up Goodreads pages, largely. And it's sometimes the Amazon reviews, too. But one of the Goodreads reviews that I saw on the first page of this book's reviews linked to this New York Times article that Paul Rudnick did after shortly after this book came out. And this article is what, like, spurred me on to read this book, because I was like, hey, this is really interesting slash potentially problematic, because he's this 58-year-old man, right, and he didn't have children. He didn't even have any nieces or nephews, it, like, makes very clear, who has decided to write a YA book, and he says explicitly in the article, I want to write things that will be a relief from the earnest torment of typical YA literature. So he sees himself as kind of this savior, this person bringing light into the YA genre by, this might be overstating it, but by providing something different. And I mean, as we've talked about in other books that we've read, sometimes the earnestness, the, like, deeply emotional thing that happens in YA all the freaking time gets annoying. But as an outsider, he, like, very much paints himself as an outsider coming in to provide the YA genre with something that, like, they desperately need. Yeah.
Like, he's better than everybody else.
Right. So I was like, this
is not what he says. Exactly.
Right. And as we talked about in the Girls podcast, I always am, like, quite wary of white elderly. They're not elderly. Okay, elderly is, like, really strange. Like, middle-aged men.
People that are outside their 20s.
People that are older than me. writing books about teen girls. And granted, these are, like, white, well-off teen girls, but it's always a fine line to tread between telling the stories of a minority versus kind of, like, telling the minority about themselves. Mm. Anyway, we talked about that more extensively in Girls, the Girls.
Yeah, it
was more but yeah, so that's why I picked this book, because I thought a similar thing might happen again.
Yeah, I mean, I was interested after Nichelle told me about the New York Times article, because I was like, oh, now I, like, if he, because before I'd even read the New York Times article for myself, I was like, yeah, like, if he really paints himself as an outsider and, like, really above it in this genre, then yeah, I want to read the book, because, like, all right, if you're gonna, like, if you're gonna talk a really good game like that,
right? If you're gonna paint yourself as the lighthouse for this dark, dark world,
yeah, your book better be pretty freaking fantastic. Right. And I was like, oh, I'll read your, like, and yeah, also just because, like, he's a man in YA genre, and he, especially his book is about girls, is
almost exclusively. Again,
and I again imagine it's currently marketed towards girls, because in the YA genre we talked about, they have a big problem, like, if the book is written about a girl, it's for girls.
Right, it has a girl on the cover, and, like, books with girls on the cover, like, do not do well with men. Like,
yeah.
Men do not read books with girls on the cover. So.
Yeah, so, I just went off the time that. Yeah, I definitely wanted to see. I was totally ready to tear down this book if there were any missteps based on, right, like, you know, if you, yeah.
Yeah.
And talk the talk.
Particularly as this man is coming in and he kind of paints himself as someone who's, like, bringing light into the genre, who's going to act as an enlightener to the uneducated masses. So then, if you're now you're writing
a little bit exaggerating on the exact words he uses in the article, you can look it up yourself, and
we can leave the link in the description of this podcast
than what we're mentioning.
Yeah, for sure.
Which it was, like, Nichelle told me about it, and I got really upset, and then I read the New York Times article, and I was like, oh, actually, it's probably not that bad.
Yeah. I always just get a little wary when it's someone who's like, I'm coming to write something better for this genre about this genre. And it's, like, a little bit patronizing.
It is. It's, so, like, that's the thing, like, there is, like, there's definitely that angle, and I did feel that, but I also, like, it is very true. And, like, we spent a lot of the podcast talking about this. A lot of the stuff in YA is
great. Right. For sure.
As my piano teacher would say, schlock. My super WASP, like, piano teacher from Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, whose dad was head of the steel company, who summered in Cape May. So, like, 100% WASP piano teacher when English truly failed her, or when romance languages, because she would also use French sometimes. Usually to tell me to shut up. I hold the distinction of being the first and undoubtedly the only student she ever told to shut up in English. She got really angry. That wasn't a great lesson. Anyway, but the point, when the romance languages truly failed her, she would speak in Yiddish. Again, she has no connections. to treat it as but she would often tell me that what I had just finished was schlock, and schlock means, I don't even remember. It's bad, though. She would also tell me sometimes that things need more schmaltz, and I do remember that that means chicken fat. But most of the time she would just tell me that it was schlock.
It seems bad.
Huh?
It sounds a lot like another SH word, so. It seems like a kinder
or
way.
Inferior goods or material.
Yeah, like trash. I said. So, pretty much she's just using that as a replacement for the other S word.
Wow.
We're trying to keep it clean, because I guess that's what we're going for. I've been told by Paige. She's edited out my profanity.
What?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know.
Which one?
Yes.
I don't edit out the minor stuff. There was, on drunk podcasting, I admit.
There's an F word.
And at the time when I said it, I didn't even know that I... What was I talking about? Oh, it's true that, like, most of the YA genre is schlock. Like,
not most of it. That's a heavy blanket to throw.
A lot of, I mean, a lot of it is really, it is like a safe harbor for a lot of people.
I think mini adult books are also
that's
schlock.
Also very true. I mean, no, genre, most books are trash.
Books are total trash.
I mean, that's probably true.
Stop reading. TV universe, movies worse still. Like, probably just lock yourself in a room to avoid trash exposure.
There is a lot of, like, bad genre fiction. There is.
I'm not always
going to
say that.
Huh?
Again, we sound really pretentious.
Well, it's true.
Sometimes we love it.
I really believe in objective aesthetic standards, and as someone who's, like...
She does, and they're her standards.
...is
so.
Aesthetics, I will fight you.
She will.
Even
you've probably
David
seen
Hume.
That happen.
Even David Hume, who doesn't even
believe
like
in... Hume.
Hume doesn't
A-hole.
Even believe in causation.
He's some
schlock. He's like, you can push, you know, you can roll a ball or whatever, but, like, you can't prove cause and effect. Even David Hume, who doesn't believe in causation, he, like, basically almost, not quite, but, like, almost believes in objective aesthetic standards.
Yeah.
He does believe that, like, there are people that have better taste, and that if you say that, I can't remember his exact example, but if, like, who's a really bad poet?
Me.
If you think that Nichelle's poetry is better than that of
William
Blake,
since
you're just wrong.
I haven't written a poem since I was 15,
someone can
so.
Who read Hume's essay on taste a little more closely can correct me, because it's like a very subtle wording, but
yeah.
Like he gets pretty close for someone to objective standards for someone
anyway.
Who doesn't even believe it. The point is,
but I don't think necessarily every piece of this is the larger discussion. We're gonna make this heavy short. I'm not gonna be. Anyway, we don't need to get into it. I'll just let Paige have her piece, and then we can move on to
a
reading.
Lot of YAs are
there. And I don't agree with that, but I'm not going to argue with Paige because I
you don't
went
think
to
a
free...
lot of YA is really bad? Because of the 15, however many books we've read so far, most of them we didn't like and thought were bad.
Okay. Anyway.
Is that not true, though?
On a scale, we're going to rate this book.
What?
I don't want to do it. One, because I haven't prepped. I feel like I need to have articles about my disposal.
I'm just saying,
much background. Mine is in religion. There's no.
I'm just saying Twilight is objectively
this is
Paige, bad.
Paige's area of expertise. I don't agree with her, but I don't have enough.
Well, again, also my area of expertise, I would tell you that epistemologically you should defer to the expert opinion.
Always. Paige is like a complete objectivist. This is why she always thinks she's right, and then it doesn't. She's like, if I'm right, I don't even understand why we have to bother with your opinion. you've seen it happen. Most lately, probably on the Fixer podcast, in which one of us almost died from just, like, the other one strangling.
I think I cut... I think I cut out some of the fighting that happened on the Fixer
probably,
podcast.
Because it was... I mean, it's not fun to listen to us when we're fighting, as I've noticed when I listen back to these. I'm like, man, this is not fun. It's not enjoyable to listen to us. Not when we're, like, bickering, when we're actually, like, ticked at each other.
It's usually Nichelle and me.
I'm normally the one.
90%.
Well, and then I get whiny, and I hate whiny people, including myself, and it just, like, grates on me. I probably brought it up multiple times on the podcast, but I just hate whiny people, and that does include myself, and I don't catch it when it's happening, because I'm not listening to me, so I'm just whiny. When I listen back,
I'm not
I'm
listening,
like,
I'm just talking.
Cut that. No one needs to hear that. So, yeah. But anyway, Let's finish this up with reading.
Well, okay, and wait. I just want to point out that one thing. So the whole like cancer patient storyline. I feel like most readers of today's day of now. Of Namis would think of
this is a dumb point to like stop and bring up.
I don't care.
It's a ridiculous waste of time.
But compared to Tephaios, The Fault in Our Stars, because it's really popular, it's about cancer. And I think that's part of what he's doing here. I think part of his problem with YA is that like The Fault in Our Stars makes like I haven't actually read it, but let me tell you about it.
I have.
Read let it. Me give you my opinion on it anyway, because I know I'm already right. Like it doesn't matter.
Like we said, basically, I freaking read it. I'm the expert on The Fault in Our Stars because I've read it, so defer to me.
I'm just saying it's a romanticized, or at least he believes, and I think maybe it's like a romanticized depiction of cancer.
Right, John Green has said that in himself, so.
Yeah, and so part of
what No one wants to hear about the non-romantic.
Well, yeah. Yeah, it's maybe a little too real. And so the cancer patient in this novel is like the polar opposite of like someone who. Like, she's very, like, she spends most of the time, like, swearing and, like, just, like, not being, I mean, that's a whole trope in literature from, like, a long time that, like, as an invalid, as, like, almost, like, an angelic presence.
Right. Mm-hmm. John Green actually does address that trope in The Fault in Our Stars, and he talks about Hazel Grace.
Again,
haven't read it. The main character talks about how often children with cancer are seen as like having some innate wisdom.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, actually just a teenager who's watching America's Next Top Model in my bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Yeah, so I think he was trying to go like 100 miles.
He was trying to go a million miles away.
Oh, I almost caught myself before I said that. I changed it to 100 from a million. Because it wasn't like a million miles.
It's 100. Podcast. It's 100. Shout out to number one. What are we on now? I don't know.
I think it's 15. We're going to have to find out before I save it with the wrong numbers. Whoops. The metadata will be all screwed up. I barely know what that is, but I know it's a thing. I think
it's probably important for, like, SEO. Anyway.
Anyway, so mostly it's like partially John Green, but it's also earlier, back in the day before John Green, there was this woman named Lurleen. I swear that's her name, Lurleen.
It's Lurleen McDaniel.
Lurleen McDaniel. And she wrote... Again, haven't read these books, because these are the books that you saw in your, like, Scholastic Book Order form.
Yeah.
There was one, I mostly saw was the one with, like, you just see, like, the bodice of the wedding gown and, like, the pink rose bouquet.
Mm-hmm.
Some girl holding it. That's how you see the face
like,
or anything.
It's, like, very, in, like, a, all variations of a watch remember. It's just, like, terminal illness romance.
Yeah, that's all she wrote. But the one I would always see in, like, the Scholastic Book Order forms was something about, it has something to do with, like, the girl had cancer. She fell in love with a race car driver. There's a lot of stuff happening.
It's very Nicholas Brooke for teens, but like not as popular.
I used to always remember seeing it at the book order forum and being like,
I had a friend.
That's a lot and that's ridiculous. And B, like, this seems like too hard for like, even as a child, I was like, this seems like too much for like kids or teens. Like, this is a lot.
I had a friend in like 6th and 7th grade, and that's all she read was learning Lane McDaniel. So she had a lot. She would pump them out.
Even today, I'm like.
Prolific. That's what I said.
You said lithic. Lithic.
Whatever.
Anyway.
Prolific.
Someday we're going to get to the bottom of yourself. Issues about literacy.
Also, this is a side story, but I wanted to talk about it anyway. But there was a while in high school where I was, like, forbidden by myself and by Paige. So by the highest authorities. Exactly. From reading any books that were, like, romance death books.
We call them pink books.
We do call them pink books.
Because they usually have pink books.
Yeah. Well, for a while, I was banned from, like, all, like, pink books at all. Mostly to avoid those books where it ends in a romantic death. Romantic tragedies. Because they would just, like, destroy my life. And they would make me, like, so depressed. And I was just, like, so empathetic to these characters. And also, they made me frequently think I had cancer. But you spent this whole summer after reading A Walk to Remember, thinking I just, like, had cancer and I hadn't discovered it yet. Did I have any symptoms? No. None. I would, like, look OMG what the symptoms would be.
Did not even have any choice of a headache.
My hip hurt. Probably a bone cancer. Like, I don't know. It was very strange.
I mean, Plato had a point. When Plato kicks the poet out of the city, why? Part of the reason is because they manipulate emotion. Yeah. So when I'm talking, like, a lot of, like, this worry stuff, like, it manipulates emotion.
Right.
Usually on a very shallow, superficial level. Right. And so we can, like, talk about how, like, it's just, like, it's dumb or just, like, if teenagers get, like, too swept away in it. But also just, like, right. It's a thing with,
Nicholas like, Sparks, all, an adult,
like, art in general where yeah. emotions are being manipulated and maybe they're not. Right. That's not the reactions you would wish to cultivate in yourself. Right.
And this is an article, I probably have referenced it before because it was something that my English teacher posted it a long time ago on Facebook, and it's about how, like, literature, so, like, literature being, like, higher quality books, creates empathy, but, like, pop fiction doesn't. And they talked about because literature, like, allows you to feel things and, like, provides you opportunities to be empathetic towards characters, where pop fiction most of the time just makes you feel things, and the difference is, like, very important until in the way that as readers we, like, grow from reading these books. Like, you're not growing from being sad about people dying.
Yeah.
When it's, like, you're forced to, almost. You're made to feel that way versus being allowed to feel that way. Being allowed to be empathetic towards these characters.
Yeah. Shit, I wish I would have had that article in my thesis. Why didn't you send it to me? Because my thesis, I was trying to prove, like, beauty and goodness, like, this very, like, strong connection.
Mm-hmm.
To maybe the point of being synonymous. I don't know how far you want to take it. I'll take it as far as I can go, though. And I wanted to... That I mean, that was, like, a big thing, was that, like, there's, like... I really want to prove that, like, there's, like, literature. And, like, that, like, there is, like, art with a capital A. Mm-hmm. And then there's just... And then there's trash. And, like, maybe it's entertainment.
Right.
Like, I know, like, I've made fun of a lot of, like, pop music, like, genre fiction. I also partake of it, though. Like, right. I am a consumer of it.
It's
I just also know that I'm doing the wrong thing. By doing
and it's
it,
also but. Sometimes cathartic. And I think, I think one of the reasons that people like horror movies and these books that are like so tragic is it allows you to like have catharsis over those emotions without having to go through the process of feeling them and like dealing with them themselves. Which well, is an Aristotelian idea.
That's Aristotle's whole idea is that tragedy is important to the city because it provides catharsis.
Right.
But I would wonder, in line with the article, that literature builds empathy while genre fiction really doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
If tragedy of like a high level, so you think of like you could maybe go like Oedipus Rex or something like that,
right.
is something that does provide that like real and authentic
yeah.
catharsis, whereas like
Chibios?
The Notebook yeah. doesn't.
Yeah,
and I think
know.
That's true. Do you feel catharsis after The Notebook, or are you just like wrecked?
I don't know.
I feel
don't...
mostly nothing but like hate, but
yeah.
that's just me.
But... We've talked about Paige. I don't know, because then I just don't understand the appeal of that. And I'm someone who, like, loves that stuff and has to be very careful with consumption of it still.
Again, I banned her from it for good reasons.
No, it was bad. I was, like, destroying my emotional state. It was based upon... I've always been, like, too empathetic. I've gotten better as I've gotten older, but, like, as a child...
Now
it's like,
I'm not empathetic towards anyone now.
When I read, like, the 5th Harry Potter book, like, I was, like, angsty the whole time I was reading it. Like, I very much... get absorbed into my reading and as a child like would then take that back into the real world. But so I was being from those books for a while. But they are still appealing, and there's some days where I like find myself wanting to read that. I just finished and the movie just came out for Me Before You.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those books that's just like purposely like really, really sad. And sometimes you're just like, why is this so sad? I found myself at the end of Fault in Our Stars where I like I cried like a lot. That book. I was like, this book is too sad. It was too much sad. But then, like, I still went and saw the movie, and I've seen the movie multiple times. Like, there's something, like, comforting in the, like, fictional sadness. I don't know.
Like, I'm not drawn to that at all.
But most people are,
that's
obviously,
true.
If you look at number.
Page is broken. Slash. It's so already so highly evolved.
Maybe.
I don't want to be made sad by what I read.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what that is exactly, but... Yeah, false catharsis. We have quickly gotten off the topic of this book.
It was really deep.
But, yeah, that was a good conversation. It was like the beginning of our Black Mirror conversation.
Yeah.
It was also good. Mm-hmm. If you haven't listened to that podcast, go back and listen to it.
We're self-diagnosing ourselves as...
Yeah.
As having a really
like
therapy
for us.
Huh?
This is like therapy for us? Except not really, because we have these conversations all the time, even when you're not listening to us.
Yeah,
so we don't hang out that often besides the podcast anymore.
Really busy.
Now I have this sort of busy, but like I also, like, don't leave my house ever, so whatever.
I mean, our schedules
are very different, too.
Also, we have nowhere to go.
Yeah, we don't have any money, and...
Slash, we also live with our families.
Yeah.
I mean, it's free.
It is free.
But also, like...
Like, I could move out if I got, like, worse, like, a crappy job and decided to do that. So, I always have to remember that, but, like, it's a choice. Anyway, we're gonna give you a book recommendation.
Anyway.
And then we're gonna read it. We recommend first, right?
Yep.
We have to discuss whether we do that first. That's step one. Then we recommend. So this time we're recommending a book that is actually funny, because that was supposedly one of the aims of this book. And there were some lines in
social satire, like immersed in pop culture.
Yeah. And there were some lines that made me laugh, but it didn't do it well. And there's so many like television shows that do it so well. That this was just like,
yeah,
maybe that's why. Maybe television is just a better medium for satire, and so written satire is dying. I don't know. Whatever.
I don't think that's true. I think of really good examples of written satire, but
modern written satire. I can only think of like Industrial Revolution written satire.
Why is that the first thing that comes to mind?
I don't know. I feel like we spent a lot of time on like the satire of the Industrial Revolution when I was in history class.
I feel like I spent zero time on that. I couldn't even tell you what. I don't know. Now I don't know. I don't know.
But anyway.
Ask for
So, the book I'm recommending is actually two books, but either of Mindy Kaling's books, the first one being Why Is Everyone Hanging Out Without Me, and the second one
is
being...
Is Everybody Hanging Out Without Me? Question.
Okay. Yeah. And the second one being Why Not Me? Mm-hmm. Which are both great, both funny. Mindy Kaling is able to kind of do the thing that Paul Rudnick is not able to do, and... and the fact that she's able to kind of poke fun at a lot of aspects of culture, but I think she's able to do it successfully because she's an insider. So she's able to poke fun without, like,
saying that things are stupid. She doesn't herself totally as, like, above it either.
Like, right. No, she's, you know, like, she's part of the culture. Right. Yeah, which I think it works well. Mm-hmm. You can poke fun at the Real Housewives if you also are like, but I watch them every time they're on.
It typically works, but I can do it, yeah. You sounded really mean about this author, which is not exactly a mean thing.
I feel like you can take it.
I feel like, that's what I was thinking, before this episode, I was like, should I, like, when we post this, should I tweet at? I was like, if any author can, like, take it, it has to be this one, right?
Right, he's a satire, like, he does satire, that's like,
this is a thing.
As a comedian or a satirist?
Whatever, never mind.
A satirist. I feel like you have to be, like, willing to take criticism, because that's what he's critiquing culture. So culture, we're culture now. Culture's allowed to critique him back. No, that's what, because I feel like he's opening himself up for that. Like, as someone
already said. I feel like that. We sounded a little bit more mean than I thought we were going to sound. I don't know.
But I'm also willing to have, like, a conversation with any, like, I don't have personal vendettas against any of these people.
Yeah, I just feel like, Paul, our good friend Paul, who we've spent an hour crashing, would be, like, more able to take it than, like,
right,
some of our, I don't want to be gentler. Too chemical, but our, like, some of the female authors, I feel like
their book is,
I know, their book is their life. And, like,
yeah, that's true. Some of them, I'd be like, I don't know.
Like, Paul, like, this is also, like,
what not about the mail we read? We read more male. We've probably read mostly female authors.
For sure. Yeah. I feel like a female author are typically, they're people who are mostly, a lot of them are just like, Or is this person, he writes a lot of other stuff?
Yeah. As does Paul, yeah. As does Tucker.
Yeah, so.
And I feel like you're right, because this is just part of their work. This is their life's work.
Yeah.
This is like one thing in their arsenal.
And I will say, I've actually read.
Also lesser, I think. I don't know if they would classify it that way, but from, like, a outside perspective, if you were just looking at it, perhaps something that you could consider lesser. Like, he writes plays for adult people, so maybe his YA work is lesser. This, like, food critic that, like, is a publisher at a major food magazine, like, his YA novel would be his, like, lesser work.
Yeah.
His secondary work, perhaps, would be a better.
Yeah, I don't know how they would view it, but that's certainly how it would look to most outsiders. And to be clear, I've actually read one of Paul's other books, He wrote another YA novel.
His own another YA novel.
Which I didn't even realize until I started reading this and, like, figured out who these people were. And I like that one better than this one. It's not, like, one of my favorite books or anything, but I didn't notice the same problems that I did in this book with that.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay, sorry, we thought that was going to be really short, but in the middle there was that, like, deep conversation.
Maybe we'll cut some stuff out.
We need to talk for, like, 40 minutes before we get anywhere. That's kind of a problem.
We talked for 45 minutes before we started recording, so.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's not like we're not trying to, like, get through stuff before we start recording, but.
Just that. We have to unearth what we really felt, our deeper thoughts.
We just talk a lot.
It's like a rough draft, and then
we talk nonstop. It's a problem.
Yep.
Our sophomore English teacher found that out.
She tried to separate us. We've talked about her a lot.
We've talked about her a lot, but we never talked
Wendy
about
Wendy comes up her. Frequently.
Wendy. We're calling her Wendy now?
Yeah.
That's hilarious. We're calling her Wendy now.
But it's funny.
I mean, yeah, it's not what we called her, because we had a sophomore English. But that's probably more, like, anonymous. Yeah, Wendy. Okay, so when we got to pick our seats, you know, at the beginning of sophomore English, Michelle and I sat right next to each other. Why? Because we talked through the whole class, all class, every not class, all the time. Not disruptively. Again, we...
to us.
Yeah, to us.
Maybe we should take a poll of people around us before we, like, definitively say that.
It wasn't disruptive. It wasn't disruptive to us.
As a teacher now, Paige, would you have said that would have been heck of annoying to have in your class? You would have hated us.
I mean, it's...
Or befriended us.
See, that's the thing. Like, it's... Again, like, we paid attention, and we always did the work. If I know kids are paying attention...
We did great work.
I try to let it go. But generally, that's not what's happening.
Wendy.
But we sat together, and we talked all the time. And then, you know...
Like, constantly.
Constantly. Like, we never shut up. Period. You may have noticed. The fact that we keep talking of each other all the freaking time is not an accident.
That's what happened while she was lecturing.
This is the default. We can have two separate strands of conversation going. Like, I could be talking about something that's slightly different, and Michelle talking about something different, and we'll still be listening to each other. Again, we're just really, like, highly evolved, like, really good at talking.
I'm less evolved on Paige, though, because I still want to watch The Notebook. And I'm going to go see Me Before You. Probably by myself, because I'm probably going to cry.
Good luck.
Or with Alyssa, maybe.
You can go with Alyssa. You can both cry.
She's in Guatemala right now.
She's coming back.
Not we all. Maybe. Anyway, Wendy...
Wendy
tried to separate us.
Wendy came in one day with a random teen shirt, you know? It randomly makes
probably mostly either. Because of us, we would like to think. Because we did believe in high school that the world revolved around us a little bit. Which, just our defense, it did a little bit.
Did she decide to make a random seating chart to break up friend groups? Not based on us? That's probably true. Now, her random seating, how this happened was that she'd also moved the desk, and so half the desks were on each half of the room. They so, like, one like, half would be facing each other. Yeah. So we'd have the room facing each other, and they were, like, 3 to 4 deep. And how this random seating chart shook out was that I was all the way in the back on one side of the room, and Michelle was in the
like, second row.
The facing row on the all the way back of the other one. The point is that we were in the same...
5 or 6.
The same horizontal row? It depends on how you look at it.
Vertical, same row.
We had 5 people in front of us, and we weren't diagonal, so you couldn't look around people. We just had 5 solid people in front of us, including a large section in the middle of the room, because it was left open for her to, like, walk.
And the projector was there, you know.
Yeah, and so she basically put us as far away as we could possibly be, and the worst sight line possible. And I'm sure, and we're like, there's no way this is random.
Yeah.
You picked the worst possible seats for us.
My mom's an elementary school teacher. I know how random seating chart works.
Yeah.
They might start out at random.
And then, yeah.
And then you fix it.
Exactly.
So it's less random when you're done.
Yeah.
Because there are certain kids that shouldn't sit next to each other.
Yeah.
And Paige and I were those kids. But.
But then Wendy
Paige and I would not be halted.
Yeah, it doesn't matter where. Wendy quickly found out that no matter where you put us, we're not going to stop talking to each other. You can make it harder, but we're not going to stop. And so you would. So we would talk just as frequently as we did when we sat next to each other, only we were 5 people, we had 5 people, solid bodies in front of us. So then you can't see it because this is an audio podcast, but we would just lean convulsively side to side, leaning all the way, you'd have to hold up to the side of the desk and like lean all the way out into the aisle. And we had 5 people in front of us, so people would keep moving, you know, and like shifting. And so we would shift and we just go left to right in and out of the desk. And we just constantly, and we would just mouth
like really dramatically.
And hand gestures.
And hand gestures. And we would, and it was just like made at sign language, just like this frantic pace. And we were just like flipping in and out of left to right as we just like flailed our arms around and mouth things.
So that you know what happened to a next
random seating chart?
Guess who's back next to each other? Guess who's less distracting next to each other than across the room? Paige and Michelle, because then everyone's staring at us. Because we're talking. So, yeah. We were the best students, as we've talked about multiple times. Our teachers loved us. Anyway, we're going to rate this book now.
Okay.
We're going to rate this on a book, on this book, on a scale of teen fandoms. So we're going to rate it on a scale from Twihards, a fandom that I was a part of for that time period we were just speaking about, to
Directioners.
And we are going to rate this in Believers.
Oh, yeah. Okay, cool. You can write to us at smartgirlsbystacks.
Follow us on Instagram.
At gmail.com. Yeah, our Instagram is
smartlit.
It's
really good. We have a bookstagram, which is, like, a whole thing. I'm, like, still learning about all these, like, crazy things that happen on bookstagram. Like, upside-down books are really trendy right now on Instagram.
Are intense, but...
Anyway, try on bookstagram.
We're Instagram. If you're looking for the social media, the Instagram, we're on Instagram.
But our handle is smartgirlsystacks on Instagram. We're on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. At smartgirlsya.
We're on Goodreads.
And we're on Goodreads, where we post reviews. We post some short reviews, and they are, if I may say so as the person who wrote them, gems.
I helped once, and I don't even know if they'd use my
I
words.
Haven't gotten around to it yet. I meant to. Then I went to work and everything.
Which has been a little bit busy in Denver, as we discussed. Anyway.
Kids haven't even gotten here, and it's already like.
So follow us on those shit. Places
mm-hmm.
if you want.
The Red Girl Blue Boy review on Goodreads is really good.
If you want, you can leave us a review on iTunes. That'd be
only good ones. No, not just kidding.
You can leave bad ones, especially if you're one of our authors whose feelings has been hurt.
Now, if you're an author and you just want to conduct a flame war, like.
Yeah, we really want to start some Twitter beef. I think that would really help our follower numbers. So.
I feel like that would maybe not be conducive to our overall aims. But.
Twitter beef always gets you followers. We need to start with something big, though, like Kanye.
Oh, yeah. That's a good idea.
Kanye needs to write a YA book so you can come at him.
I'm sure it'd be really interesting.
Kanye does really good Twitter rants, so. Shout out to you, Kanye. Okay, we will talk to you next time. We will be reading something hopefully better than this.
But nobody knows because we haven't read it yet.
I started it.
Oh. Well.
That's pretty good so far. I'm only like 20 pages in.
Alright. We'll see you then.